Right, good evening everyone, and welcome to this Community and Wellbeing Scrutiny Committee, and a special welcome to Alison Gould and Jeremy Rowe, have I got that right, from Freedom Leisure, and a special welcome also to Graham Smith from Viola. Thank you very much for giving your time and coming along this evening. Right, and can I ask everyone either to put your mobile phones on silent or switch them off or whatever. We don't want any phones ringing in the meeting. Thank you very much. Okay. So, first item on the agenda is the minutes of the 24th of September. Is everybody happy with those? Are any comments or anybody got to make? Or quite happy for me to sign them? Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Jackie. Any apologies, Jackie, please?
All from officers, so Anna Nevin, Craig Royal and Gabrielle Whitehouse.
Yeah, Gabrielle's got, a flat tyre. She was setting off but got a problem, so that's why she's not here. So thank you for that. Public question times?
Nothing.
Councillor session? Nothing. Members item? We've gone to item 5A, which is the Healthcare Overview and Scrutiny Committee. Now, my understanding is that the chairman of the Health from County should have been here this evening and be giving a verbal update, but unfortunately, she's not arrived. And I don't know why. And I've not got anything prepared. So we'll just leave it in abeyance and hopefully she'll be here next time and give us an update from the Health. Yeah? Is that okay with everyone? Yeah?
I think it might be worth asking a letter or an email to show our disappointment that they couldn't attend tonight.
Take on board with that, Jack. I do agree with you, actually, because am I right in thinking she come to the last meeting?
She didn't come to the last one, but she did put apologies in for that one.
Right, okay. Yeah. Okay, well, if we could, and then probably ask her to give an update on everything that's happening at Health at County, that would be good. Thank you very much. Right, and now we're on to item 5B, which is the update for the task and finish. So I'm asking Marnie if she'll bring us an update. I understand, was it yesterday you had a meeting?
We did.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, we had a meeting yesterday about the food waste collection service and where we were. We had some fantastic presentations and we were also given some information that we're going to see being rolled out onto our website. It's imminent at the moment. So it's just going to be a bit of basic information for residents about the food waste scheme, something for the council to build on and add to in the future. We discuss the literature that's going to be going out, some of the wording that we were happy and not happy with. We have found out that the procurement process has been started. It was agreed at a cabinet meeting recently for caddies, etc., to be procured. We were very disappointed to find out, unfortunately, that liners were also going to be used, and that's been agreed to at the recent cabinet meeting as part of the procurement process. We were very keen for liners not to be used. We have had the pros and cons. It is deemed that if liners are used, it may encourage more recycling. However, the downside of that is that the digester, although it will digest the food and kind of take off the plastic bags as it meets them, it doesn't do it all the time. So there are instances where plastic will go into that system, it'll be digested up, and it will end up by becoming part of the end product that goes on farmers' fields. It's something that we're not happy about. We understand we've heard the pros and cons, but it's not something that we sit comfortably with, because obviously we're going to be polluting fields potentially, possibly, as a result of trying to encourage more food waste collections. So that's something, unfortunately, that has gone through. But we have been talking about the possibility of getting clients to request additional liners as opposed to them automatically being given them, in the hope that it might discourage the use of them in the future. We're also looking at some of the wording that will be going out and try and not discuss bins being kept clean by using caddy liners, because obviously we want people to clean and not use these. We've had plenty of evidence about the impacts of usage and non-usage given to us. The officers have been very, very thorough in the studies. It does seem as though some of these areas that are, have already got caddies and are using liners have got impact reports, but we're not so sure about how much it's impacted people who were never given the liners in the first place. But we are where we are. We can't use recycled liners because it just doesn't work in this kind of context. But I know that the officers will be giving you more of an update, I believe. We'll be having a presentation, no?
Craig's not here. He was just going to assist if you needed any more information.
Well, tell him I'm on the As I say, the officers have worked very, very hard on this. And it's been really interesting, the kind of information that's been coming forward and the ideas and the conversations that we've been having around the table regarding this. But at the end of the day, last night, we did sort of leave feeling as though we shouldn't be using plastic.
Well, thank you very much. And can I say thank you very much to the Task and Finish group, and thank you, Marnie, for that work that you're doing. It's really good. Josh, do you want to make any comments on what's been said about the food waste, please?
Yeah, I know.
Craig, don't mind me calling you by first names.
No,
is that okay?
Craig turns to apologies. Unfortunately, went to the dentist tonight for a quick checkup before coming here, and the dentist managed to pop one of his foot infected. So he's then had to have it subsequently refilled. But I know got Graham in tonight from VOD. Graham's going to do the presentation and the waste generally. But I think none of us are really comfortable about the use of food waste liners, but I think the evidence suggests that if we don't use it, we're going to have really, really low take up on it. What we are going to do though is now we've got the facility, the disposal point. Have been awarded, which is going to be Biffa Plant in Canada. I'm going to get an opportunity to get members to go and see that, so you can ask that question first. I think Councillor Rose asked a question last night, didn't you, about how much of this plastic gets into the actual the field and things. What I will say to give you a little bit of comfort is that process is actually regulated by DEFRA, so it has to be licensed anyway, so they have limits on what plastics can go. And certainly if you see, you go to our windrow composting plants, which is where we currently take the food waste, and you look at that, you see an awful lot of plastic that makes it through their processes as well, you know, even hard plastics as well. So when the end product, which is classed as a ground conditioner, not a fertiliser, but a ground conditioner, goes out, you can still see plastics, quite large pieces of plastics in that as well. So don't think that, you know, just because we're doing food waste, we're introducing additional, that plastics is already there in the process we do now. That also is regulated by DEFRA and quite tightly licensed. And the one thing that was made aware of me that's come up literally today, and probably Graham will be more aware of this, is there's research at the minute around the gases that come off the food waste during collections and the harm that that can be doing to collectors. So that again is another reason why people are looking at whether we put in plastic bags as such.
This was something we actually raised last night, Chair. Yeah. We discussed this as well.
Yeah, and we have that, and certainly had that a lot when we were in vessel composting our garden food waste, which is a process we used to do at Cannock, when it literally you tip your wagons off and it goes, gets cooked in a big shed for at least 72 hours, and then they take it out and then they windrow compost it, which is what we do, like really long rows of composting. Do that a lot used to do that at Cannock, and we used to have that there where you've got these biodigestated type of chemicals coming off the plant, and you could smell the guys literally. The offices used to smell, you could literally smell food waste week or garden waste week in the offices because of that. It real quite a strong smell. So there's a concern industry wide, health and safety point of view, about the operators and loaders and things like that. So again, another reason for using plastics in there.
Thank you very much. What can I just ask, what's the time scale on this then, Josh? Well, you know, when is it?
So we'll be rolling out in the new year. The OEA will be doing our rollout for us. And we're looking to start sometime in April.
Sometime in April. Not April the 1st, hopefully.
No. It should be government traffic to be in April the 1st. Lots of council. We are really looking, Staffordshire. We are well ahead of the curve. Most of us are going April, May. June and July, we're hoping to go in April with ours. We've got trucks ordered, we've trained up the guys ready to do the rollout. We've got all of the, in fact, we get time.
Don't spill his thunder.
I'll show you a photograph of the facility that we've got out, all of our containers in, which is on the toll gate. So we are touch wood ahead of the curve at the moment.
So we're also talking about the fact that we're going to have leaflets going out in the early new year, which we're going to be looking at the task and finish, just to see how we feel about some of the wording or format. Mm-hmm. We were talking about the mascot that there's going to be a mascot on the side of the trucks of a food monster. Nobody knows what that looks like yet, but
not be a banana skin, will it?
We do have a couple of volunteers, Craig and Councillor Rose, to dress up in the mascot.
To encourage people to get involved.
They just want to do it. And we have also last night. Obviously, we've understood the kind of pressures that the officers have been under to try and get all this in place in time for the rollout. Everybody's doing it, which has made their job 10 times harder, mm-hmm. because everybody's after the same things. We obviously are not happy about some aspects of it, so we are inviting, or we're going to ask our MP to come to one of our meetings so that we can talk to her about the pros and the cons of what's going on and see if some of that could maybe be fed back in some mm-hmm. way, mm-hmm. Because it's been a struggle, hasn't it? It's not been an easy job.
No.
And, you know, there are many councils that have actually put the time back.
Yeah, I know you mentioned that, but that's not been talked about here. No.
There was a very slim window of
opportunity
for that to be done, but it was a very quiet, slim window of opportunity.
Right, okay.
So not everybody was aware enough to be able to say something. It was very very difficult, and of course when many of the councils approached them, it was too late by that time, even though they never knew.
Well, as I say, thank you for all the good work that you're doing, you know, and let's hope that it's accepted by the public, okay, and we're moving forward. So thank you, and keep up the good work, and we look forward to your next meeting and bring it forward to our next meeting as to where we are. So thank you very much. Okay, thank you, Josh, for that. Right, we'll move on to item number 7 now, which is the officers' reports. And the first item is 7A, which is the Viola report. So welcome, Graham, and I'll over to you now, so
thank
you can tell
much.
Us where we're at and what's happening.
Thank you very much. So we've been talking about the future of the food waste. Now we're going to be looking back on our annual report from 24-25, so mm-hmm. April 24 to March 25. So just some of the key headline figures really from the report, just to bring them to your attention. 6.5% reduction in reported miscollections. 93% of the miscollections reported have been resolved within the required SLA, which is an improvement on 3% from the previous year. 35.7% increase in near-miss reporting. We'll come to the near-misses a little bit as we go through the report and the importance of those near-misses. A 99.96% collection success rate, so that's the first bin emptied first time. Over 4 million collections per year made, with 1,564 missed collections, which obviously gives you the 99.96% collection rate. So an overview of the breakdown through the year, the different quarters. Again, over 4 million collections, with only 1,564 missed collections. Although we are focusing, each year we tend to manage to bring those missed collections down because they're important to us, they're important to residents. It's a very good success rate, but if it's your bin that we've missed, then obviously that's not good enough. So we do work hard on the success rate. As you see in the breakdown of the quarters as we go through, there are bandings in there, so we're targeted on trying to get below those bandings, which we've done on a few occasions, but only the once on this year. But overall, the year's been quite good. Annual missed collection, assisted missed collections. So for those of you not aware, assisted collections are for elderly, infirm, or people that can't put their bin out for some reason. So we go up to the property, collect the bin, take it back down, and then return it. What we did in the previous year and this year that we're talking about is we introduced an assisted collection onto every new garden waste bin that was subscribed to, just to make sure that the crews were aware that a new bin has come onto their rounds. Some of those have been missed, but what they've done is increased the actual assisted collection. So the ones that are in place for the people that really need it are still good, but it's just that figure's skewed slightly just because we've tried to introduce a new system just to ensure that the collections are started correctly as we start on the new subscriptions. Just to give you some ideas why we have missed collections and why they come about. Obviously roadworks, we're all aware of the amount of roadworks in the town and around the areas. New build estates as well, we tend to find that we only find that there's new bins when we've missed them, because you tend to find as we work through an estate, a new housing estate, they normally move residents in the other side of their working area, so we don't know about it until we get a complaint to say you've missed our bin. So we then go and service those, and once we know those, they don't get missed again. Inconsiderate parking of vehicles blocking access tends to be in sort of tighter areas of town, but yeah, we sometimes get blocked and we can't get around to all the addresses. And obviously adverse weather conditions, which so far in the last year or two haven't been that bad. We've managed to cope with it as best as we can. We always try and make sure that we can get as far as we can. We try to keep the guys in a little bit later so that the daylight has come along and we can get out and we can be seen and we can actually see where we're walking. So we try and make every effort to get those collections completed. And then a summary of all the collected weights. So we've had a decrease of minus 0.11% in this year. Most of the ones that have increased are refuse and bulky waste. Everything else has decreased. We had quite a lower garden waste on this year, obviously because of weather and different things. There's lots of variations that affect the garden waste. Subscriptions have gone up, but the actual weight collected has gone down a little bit. And then the same for recycling. Can't see that too well. That is our health and safety stats. So that gives you a breakdown per year of the incidents, the accidents in RIDDOR. RIDDOR are accidents that are reportable because of the seriousness of them. We haven't had any in this reporting year. We did have one the previous year, so we have reduced that. And I mentioned before the near misses. We have increased the number of near misses in this reporting year, up to 152. I'll go to that one first. This is the reason why we try and encourage near misses. So they're near misses, or we call them now close calls. So these are where Our employees will report things that they see before an accident happens. So this is the idea of it. The more close calls or no misses you receive, then you decrease the amount of minor accidents and serious accidents. So the more near misses we want to get, the better, so that we can change things and alter things before an accident actually occurs. So if we go back to the description so that we've got an understanding of them, near misses and close calls are defined as an event not causing harm but has the potential to cause harm or injury or ill health. So it could be something like they see something on the floor that they may trip over, there might be an overgrown hedge or something like that. We tend to get a lot of near misses with hedges. The other one, because the previous year we introduced street kind, so it was trying to encourage our guys to report vehicles on pavements and things like that, which really, when they're emptying bins at the back, we get vehicles that are trying to push past the vehicles going on pavements and all sorts. So that's something that we've really pushed with the guys to try and report. Where we do get those, because we have got CCTV on the vehicles, we can report those to the police, and we have had some success with the police that have spoken to drivers, and there have been prosecutions from some of those as well, where an actual driver makes a decision to actually drive up the pavement and go around the vehicle and putting one of our employees at risk. So an incident is an unplanned event that doesn't result in an injury. Most of the ones that we find that have been reported in this year and from then on are vehicle fires, where we have small incidents of fires in the back of vehicles. Things like vape batteries or lithium batteries tend to, when they go into the back of a vehicle, if they're put in the wrong waste stream, as the hopper comes down and clears them, it can pierce the batteries, and then that can cause the oxygen to get in, and then it results in either a lot of smoke or a fire. So we haven't had any large fires on these where we've had affected vehicles, but there's been quite a few where we've noticed smoke coming from the vehicle, so they've stopped, they've checked to make sure that there's no fire. So we've had no significant incidents of those. But they're the main ones that we deal with in terms of incidents. Accidents, obviously, is a separate identifiable event which has actually caused physical injury to someone. I think it was 5 in this year. 2 were for slips and trips and falls. 1 was for an injury to a hand. I can't remember the 4th one, but the 5th one was actually not an accident. It was reported as an accident, but when we investigated, it was deemed not to be an accident. It was a sort of more spurious claim from one of our employees. And a riddle, which is the most serious one, is a reporting of injuries, diseases, dangerous occurrence and regulations. But they're quite simply, for us, they're more about the amount of time that someone's off work. So if they're injured at work and they're off over 7 days, then it has to be reported as a riddle. Majority of them do, not all of them, but so there's no, we've not had, touch wood, in our collection service for a long, long time, a serious accident. It's more about the length of time that someone's off work. And bringing it around to the social values, obviously this is something we work quite hard on in the borough. We regularly do the Easter egg collection, so we had over 1,000 Easter eggs distributed locally to local charities. So we use Rising Brook Food Bank, Hearts and Hands, and also A Child of Mine. So we also distribute the Easter eggs to those. We also do the same for the Christmas Food Bank, so we've started those early November. So this year, reporting year, we raised over £4,000 of foods and goods, which is donated to the food banks. We tend to find that it's selection boxes to A Child of Mine and places like that, and also to Hearts and Hands and food banks. But also, we tend to have a meeting with the food banks to see what they need. Sometimes it's things like woolly hats and gloves for children and different things, or presents, colouring books, and all those different things. So it's not all about the food side of it. Sometimes they get some donations of those. Sometimes we try and fill a gap. It can be things like deodorants for young adults and things like that. So we go and see them and see what they need. And then every year we do the Christmas tree recycling collections, where last year and this year we raised over £13,000 for Catherine House Hospice. So how the system works is that Catherine House have a website where people can go on there and donate and arrange to have their Christmas trees collected, the real Christmas trees, because some people do try and recycle artificial ones. But we do have real Christmas trees, which we then go and collect, and then we dispose of them through Mill Farm Recycling Centre as well. So it's all a good news story for everyone. And it's every year we seem to increase the amount we raise on the Christmas tree collection. So it's hopefully this year we'll be able to do the same again. So just a few of the pictures, some of the guys that they donate. They either bring in goods and things like that, and you'll see selection boxes, but and Easter eggs. Sometimes they'll just donate money financially. We do also get donations from suppliers of ours as well. Mm-hmm. But we also, what happens then is when they bring the money in, our traffic office then go to town spending that money, going down into all the local superstores and all the local shops just to try and, whenever they can, the pop town to get the required things for us. So you've got Easter eggs up there and the selection boxes and the food bank collections. And the final part of the presentation is the annual service improvement plan. So we obviously at the end of each year we then look forward for the next year and look what we're trying to introduce and improve. Obviously the introduction of food waste collection, so this is what we're working at now. Improvement on containers not returned correctly. We have, it wasn't in the presentation, but it is in the report, where containers are not returned correctly to the properties can be very frustrating for residents, especially if we tend to find we get 2 degrees of containers not returned, one that is left sort of 1 meter away from where it was presented, but the more serious ones where they may be left in the middle of the drive and someone needs to get out to empty that, to move that bin before they can park their car, and if they're trying to get off a road and different things. So we've improved the way we're dealing with the not returned containers, dealing with those people. We're using the CCTV footage to be able to find out who it is that's on that crew who's not putting those bin containers back, and dealing with them through the process. We have been looking at minor changes within the depot to try and improve safety. In this current year we have changed management structure, and we've got a new set of eyes that are coming in, and we've got a new safety advisor as well, so they've come in and had a look at the depot and how we use that facility. So there's no major changes in it, but it's kind of a bit of tidying up as well, and making the site a little bit better as well. So introduction of an anti-contamination campaign. Obviously one of the issues that we're working on is looking at the paper and card that is going into a bin, blue bin, rather than going into the blue bag. And obviously there are some contaminants that are in the blue bin, so we're looking at working with the crews to try and improve the collections. If there aren't not the right materials in there, then the bins can be rejected or whatever. But then it's about educating people about how and what goes in different containers. And then obviously we've been discussing for quite a while now about container management and delivery of bins and bags for the contract. So looking at Veolia possibly doing that, but that's an ongoing conversation that we quite like having, but it's a continuing one. So. And that's from me.
Ooh, right.
If you've got any questions?
Yeah,
or
I was just going to say.
Be good with them.
Right, has anybody? Oh, right, okay. Right, Philip.
Right, okay.
Thank you very much for that, at any rate, Graham. That was very.
Potato packs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any plans on recycling those?
We are looking at that at the moment. It's not being introduced as of yet. We're working with our recycling facility. Mm-hmm. So where the material goes to is our Four Ashes MRF. So we're actually looking at the equipment within the MRF to see if we can use them, the same mix that we're going in to remove the Tetra Pak from that. So yeah, we're looking at it, we're looking at the technologies that are around. It's something that Veolia are looking at countrywide with all our MRF facilities to see all the extra things that we can bring out of that recycling mix.
Because you can take them to a facility that it's more and more things are being put into Tetra Paks, orange juices and things like that, mm-hmm. and even wine.
Yeah.
okay. Right, yes, Norman.
I did want to ask, do you have any concerns about the impacts of the food waste containers on the staff because of the weight. They're going to be, you're going to have some that's going to be very heavy and others that will be lighter. Do you think that's going to have a...
No, we do. They all have manual handling training anyway. So they don't have an issue with those. We tend to find the heavier bins tend to be garden waste bins, if I'm honest. They're fully bins, then they can be heavier. But no, they're all trained. They all have, we go through little processes where they do warm-ups before they start work and they stretch and everything else. So we do have on-site physios as well, if anything does happen. But no, it's not a concern. Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that. Can I just...
Yeah, back. Come back, please.
I think it was just having seen the caddies yesterday and realising that they're going to have to be carried to the various trucks.
The way that the majority of services work, and it's the way that we envisage ours working at the moment, is that we will use a transfer bin on the back of the vehicle. So we will have a wheel bin, which would then take off the vehicle and we would collect the caddies at nearer the... So we wouldn't actually be taking caddies backwards and forwards. We'd take a transfer bin there so we can empty those, and then when that's full, we take the wheel bin back to the vehicle. So yeah, we're trying to eliminate as much manual handling as we can, yeah.
Any more questions for Greg? No? Everybody quite happy? I think that reflects, actually. Sorry, Jack.
It was just a quick one, just asking about the Christmas food bank scheme. So how do people and companies get more involved in that?
It's something that we've done for probably 4 or 5 years now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I can get in touch with me, and we can get involved with it. We tried rolling it out a bit more to our local Veolia sites as well, and we're trying to get them set up more around the country and different things. But okay. If anyone wants to get involved, yeah,
lovely. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. If anything you want to comment on, Joss, with Veolia? No, you're quite happy.
Well, I want to say, Chair, is a thank you to Graham.
Well,
Graham and the team for themselves.
This is exactly where I was coming from. Actually, I think it's a judgment of Veolia, and we look around this table and that, and the questions that we've asked, there ain't many questions really, and I think that proves really what a really good job Veolia do. And I think I think the community are very, very happy with Veolia. And would the committee agree that it might be nice to write through Graham to the people working in Veolia from this committee to say thank you for the good work you're doing, because they probably don't get many thank yous.
they get less than what they used to, but they do get thank yous.
Yeah. So would the committee agree to write and say thank you for the good work that you're doing? Do you all agree
absolutely.
With that?
Yeah. That would be appreciated by the guys.
Yeah, I think it's something...
In terms of our workforce, we have guys that have been working on this contract for 40 odd years.
Yeah.
Man and boy, as they say. So, yeah. You know, and we're bringing in the new ones through. So, yeah, it is good to for them to be recognised.
And probably put on it Happy Christmas.
Perhaps we could particularly mention the work that they do with schools.
Yeah.
A fantastic amount of work with schools, talking about recycling and that sort of thing. And, I understand that schools even go and visit the site.
Yeah, schools do. We also are rolling out, I think it's early next year, where we've got an orchard project where we'll donate fruit trees to the schools and strawberry plants and planters.
Oh,
so that
I didn't
they
know
can,
that. Right,
yeah,
okay.
I think there's at least 15 schools that have applied for the trees. So they get donated and they can plant those. We've been doing it now for 3 years, I think.
That's another scheme that I'd love to know more about.
Yeah. And also, Madam Chair, to say thank you for the welfare checks that you do on some of our residents.
That's
really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So. With all the good work you do with all the charities and
We're very aware, especially out in the rural areas, that we can be the only people that they see nowadays. And they do like us to be there at a certain time and a certain day, and they're ready with a cup of tea, so the guys love it. So they always, we do actually insist on that they try and stop and have a cup of tea and a piece of cake, because it's a bit of comfort for these people.
In looking at it from another angle, then, you know, I mean, we know that the fire people go into people's homes and everything, and they pick up people that are probably suffering a little bit, you know. Is there something, you know, you've just mentioned about people coming out with a cup of tea or what have you. Some of these people are really lonely, you know, and is there any way that, you know, any feedback that you get from any of your people that
We have a few avenues that we can do. We normally report them through Becky Martin, and then she'll take them on our behalf. But there are several occasions where we've found people who can't work their heating, so we've had guys that have reset their timers for them and heating for them, and they've had floods and all sorts. We've found people wandering down the road.
Well, this is dementia, yeah.
And yeah. They've taken the resident back and made them a cup of tea till their family gets to them. There's lots of things probably that we don't shout enough about, but they are raised to the appropriate people. So
yeah, well, thank you very much for that, you know, because dementia is a big, big thing in the area, in the community. Thank you very much, Graham, and thank you for giving your time to come along and talk to us and give your report. Very good. Thank you very much. Thank you. Right, we'll move on to item number 7B now, which is Freedom Leisure. So can I ask Alistair and Jeremy to come and give their report, please? Thank you.
I wasn't sure where I was best to sit for the IT side, so I'll now sit here with it.
Welcome. Sorry?
Are there any additional leaflets?
Over there on the table.
On the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, will you bring me one as well, please? Is that the one I've got?
Yeah, it might not be enough flat now.
Oh.
I'm guessing to the right hand side. I'm guessing pressing to the right hand side moves on. Yeah, having a test there.
Just trying.
Okay, yeah. Good evening, all.
Okay.
Thank you for inviting us down to be able to share our presentation. Your note in the presentation is a slightly condensed version of the report, which should pick out some key highlights of the report and some information about the staff and partnership over the April 24 to March 25. So a little bit of an overview of Freedom Leisure as a collective. Just providing the update on the change of position over the year, so growth to 133 leisure and cultural facilities, including two theatres, and on behalf of 28 individual clients across England and Wales. So generally a positive year for Freedom, with significant progress on our core mission, which is improving lives through leisure. A little update on this slide from a national perspective. So over the year, Freedom Leisure's strengthened its position within the UK leisure sector, increasing, as I say, from 119 up to 133, adding facilities in Gloucester, including the University of Gloucestershire Sports Facility, and the acquisition of 1610, including four facilities and two partnerships in Essex and Southend in the more recent times, as well as retaining the Guildford partnership contract as well for a further 15 years. Alongside this as well, Freedom have also been successful in extending all their partnerships that were coming to an end of their natural initial period. So these have included most recently Wrexham, Powys, Worcester, Brighton, Rother, Arran, Bridgewater and the Forest of Dean. Alongside that, Freedom Leisure also bid for and were successful in securing agency model agreements across some of the leisure facilities and some of the partnerships with the local authorities. Like a section might be cut off on just slightly on the presentation, but I might be with that presentation again. I'll just provide a brief overview in terms of this. So you'll see within your reports you'll have the financial information in terms of it. Just to highlight, operational revenue from each venue has increased and has grown year on year. The Gatehouse was one of the venues that saw the largest increase contributor, which is driven by an increase in show performances and overall higher occupancy rates. Stone also saw a significant uplift, primarily due to the rise in membership numbers and the growth in the Learn to Swim participation. However, other venues reported similar income gains linked to overall improved participation. In terms of expenditure, costs include all venue related expenses, such as payroll, utilities, maintenance. Expenditure, as the common theme across most organisations at the moment, rose sharply compared to the previous year. These were mainly factored due to higher staffing costs due to national minimum wage adjustments, increased repairs and maintenance, some large expenditure items including boiler replacements, extensive pipework repairs and heating pump replacements at some of the leisure facilities, and also the continued high utility costs adding further pressure. In terms of the overall participation for the entire partnership, we saw an 8% increase across the facilities. I highlighted on here a couple of feedbacks that came from the customers, just from a variety of venues. And there's been an increase in the total active participation, so this relates more to the leisure venues. So to move on into a bit of the detail around the increase in participation, we first up have the heritage venues, some key large events that operate there. Positive growth of the Vikings event was held in August. This grew to an impressive 4,000 attendees, so a really positive growth, and an interesting part there to drive the engagement from, as we see on some of the pictures. Nice to highlight the young individuals and the families that engage with that, helping them educate those and experience things in a slightly different manner. We expanded to feature 20 tents as well, so a widespread event across the Carrascal grounds. There's some highlighted visitor feedback as well there, just highlighting individuals that their first time with a family, very little girl who probably enjoyed and now wants to be a Viking full time, which I'm not sure we can help fulfill that, but I'm sure further down the line we can support her on that side of things. To highlight some other parts from the heritage and the participation numbers that have increased. So the Ancient High House have operated a variety of successful events, so a Halloween to evenings themed activities attracted over 400 visitors, Christmas through the ages, book trails, history days, and one of the key focuses over the year and as it remains has been the schools. So as we saw through 2024, the bookings began to slow slightly, which we anticipated as many schools operate on a two-year trip cycle. However, one of the largest challenges, the pupil premium, one of the biggest factors and challenges there has been the rising transport costs and the way the the way the financial elements is provided to the schools and what they can choose to spend that money on and whether they need to fund transport and so forth. So one of the barriers to break down has been to look at increasing the overall school participations. And to address this, we've started developing a dedicated home education offer as well for 2025 to reach out for there. The first session is scheduled to take place, which would have been in the April, just gone at this point. A real positive for us as well, early in the new year, we launched an early years tour, which is fully launched in 2024, which received 7 bookings, all accompanied by excellent feedback. Interestingly, the teachers reported that their initial expectations were modest due to the low pricing, which highlights the importance of building confidence in our product. And one of the real key achievements to reinforce the quality assurance, we were successful across the heritage venues to achieve the Learning Outside of the Classroom Assessment Award, which achieves certification for both the High House and the Castle. This accreditation combines with our Sanford Award for Educational Excellence, demonstrating not only the high standard of our educational provision, but also the robust processes and procedures that underpin it, providing schools with reassurance and trust in what we offer. So one of the key focuses, as I say, has been breaking down those barriers and helping schools understand the importance, actually the power of the venues that we have. Just moving across to the Gatehouse, and I wanted to highlight some if you want to call it that, different from the norm of what the Gatehouse would normally offer in terms of a theatre and the shows that would normally perform there, to highlight a couple of key parts that have been there, which is Christmas wreath making workshops. We featured throughout the year, once again, proved to be one of the most popular community activities of the year, and worked with the Dapper Dance Showcase. We've had Vibe One live broadcast from the coffee shop, and also a classic film afternoon at the Met as well. So slightly different from the normal offering of what you see in terms of the Gatehouse, trying to push that forward as more of a community venue for individuals to go and visit, and break down barriers for individuals as well. One of the key ones on the calendar, as we know throughout the year, is the annual production of the Shakespeare. this one was the much anticipated 12th night at Cornish Town, which opened on the 21st of June. Celebratory gala night was held on the 25th of June. And this year's performance was met with enthusiastic audience engagement and benefited from a robust promotional campaign, including strategic marketing, public relation efforts, and active outreach by the cast themselves. However, despite the artistic success and strong promotional push, ticket sales totaled 4,066, representing actually a 19% decline compared to the previous year's attendance figures. Whilst the drop in numbers is notable, the production managed to contain and continue to uphold its reputation for delivering high quality theatre and remains a cornerstone of the cultural calendar. Looking ahead to 2025, it seems strange speaking about this as we're slightly past Shakespeare now, but the focus for us was to bring Stafford back into the Shakespeare production with a key aim to remain with high profile cast, but look at the cast based on their connections to Stafford as well, and really bringing that community feel back to it. Also, at the point of writing this, we were very optimistic that a positive shift would enable the ability to put the community back into this production whilst maintaining the high quality of production and upholding the reputation. So there are other elements in the terms of the Gatehouse Theatre. It celebrated an outstanding year for audience engagement, marked by the phenomenal success of its 24-25 pantomime with Jack and the Beanstalk, running for 4 weeks, so a slightly longer period. The production drew an unprecedented crowd of more than 18,800 attendees, so the highest in the theatre's history, cementing its reputation as a leading cultural destination. Positively, the record-breaking achievement reflects not only the popularity of the show, but also the theatre's commitment to delivering high-quality, family-friendly entertainment that resonates with audiences of all ages. In addition to this commercial triumph, the pantomime garnered critical acclaim with the stage one of the industry's most respected publications, praising the production as clever and witty. This recognition underscores the creative excellence and professional standards that define the Gatehouse Theatre's programme, continue to benchmark for future seasons. Alongside that, in the year we also had the annual summer school. This continued to flourish, attracting an impressive audience of over 1,500 people across the three completely sold out performances of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, that's hard enough to say. This year's production not only entertained but also highlighted the remarkable talent and dedication and creativity of young participants, offering them a platform to develop their skills and share their passion for performing arts. As you will all know, this event has become a key cornerstone of the community's cultural calendar as well. Mm-hmm. So moving on to the leisure venues, so this incorporated across the Rally Park, Stafford Leisure Centre and the Stone Leisure Centre as well. So as you can see, there's been growth across all of the key areas. We've had a 5% growth on the overall membership levels when comparison to the previous year. There's been a 2% increase at Stone Leisure Centre in the membership levels and a 9% increase on the Stafford Leisure Centre versus the previous year. There's been some key factors of success. One of the focuses has obviously been the improved level of service. However, enhancing the group exercise programme has been a key achievement throughout the year. The Learn to Swim programmes across the two facilities increased by 3% on the overall heads on the scheme. Stone sustained a similar performance to the previous year, while Stafford increased by 5% on the previous year. The gymnastic scheme across at Stafford Leisure Centre increased by 1% on March 2024. One of the major successes has been the enhancement of the gymnastics hub, offering early level gymnastics by the way of gym tots. This has helped provide gymnastics all the way to parent baby sessions, create a smoother throughput into gymnastics over for the foreseeable years. Particularly positive was the relaunch of the exercise referral scheme. We were successful in gaining funding to support the relaunch of this scheme across at the Stafford Leisure Centre. And between August 2024 and March 2025, we achieved 82 individuals that had joined the exercise referral programme as well. Again, offering another route into exercise and activity for individuals that may find there's challenges to that. Mm-hmm. Some of the further bits as we move forward, we're looking at further development of the group exercise programme across both venues, improved links to be created with the local GPs, social prescribers, physio groups to support the growth of the exercise referral programme, improving our junior offering for our gym and group exercise classes as well, expanding our learn to swim programme, and looking at all the exit routes as well. When people achieve what they believe would be their required standard, how can we ensure that they continue to participate in activity? And then also focusing on reward and recognition across gymnastics and learn to swim programmes with improved rewards and reward focused sessions. Moving swiftly on to events, as we know, the event calendar for staff and partnerships with Food and Leisure has some key events across the year, which we saw positive growth throughout all of the events and the engagement there. Party in the Park, the first in the calendar, displayed a 20% uplift in the previous year's numbers. The Stafford 10K displayed a 25% increase in the overall participants, with an increase of over 300 runners on the previous year. Christmas Light Switch On, the footfall increased by 1,000 individuals on the previous year, providing a 10% increase. The Pancake Race, this sustained and delivered a similar performance, but had an overall increase in engagement from local businesses within the community. And finally, the Stafford Half Marathon, with overall attendance, including runners and spectators, increasing by 10% on the previous year. And one of my particular favourite highlights is the fun run as well, that is entered by families, which is a mile run, which is just a completely different feel and approach, with a great engagement from families, young children, which are a positive uplift to just around 400 participants at that point. Moving on to a couple of key bits of our colleagues, volunteers, and some of the workplace development. One of the key parts to highlight, we have a really successful volunteer arm locally, with a volunteer coordinator in place supporting several key projects. One of these key projects over the recent times has been the Castle Herb Garden as a first priority, focusing on the removal of invasive ground, elder, and replanting the beds to restore and enhance the space. Recruitment has also begun for room guides at the High House, and in 2025 we're be seeking additional support for gardening at Isaac Walton Cottage as well. To underpin that, volunteers have played quite a vital role in supporting events, including managing customer liaison points, distributing maps and event information, collecting feedback, and assisting with eco-friendly seed planting workshops in the herb garden. One of the key bits to mention as well, we work closely with the volunteers as well on the half marathon, the 10K, the Christmas lights, which are one of the major events that we organise and operate as well. To just reference again, their contribution in this has been instrumental in creating welcoming, informative experiences for visitors while advancing our sustainability goals. Just highlighted some training and workforce developments we've provided throughout the year, funded training courses for level one and level two swim teachers. We identified as an organisation, as an industry, there's a serious challenge in terms of the recruitment of swim teachers, and felt that supporting those through funded training courses would be a good way to help get that next generation of individuals. Funding training courses for lifeguard courses, CPDs, which is continuous professional development, for a variety of key roles across the organisation, the area. And then as well, externally funded courses for specific areas, including good housekeeping, conservation, cafe, developing evaluation plans for museum and heritage as well. As an organisation as well, one of our goals has been around carbon literacy. So carbon literacy training for managers and local leads has also been provided. And then customer focused training as well around sales and customer service. Across the next two slides, I just wanted to highlight some of the key elements and the key press releases that were achieved throughout the year. I touched on them briefly, but the top one just mentions it, the learning outside of the classroom that was achieved, which is a prestigious badge for the heritage venues. We've got Freedom Leisure becoming the first UK leisure operator to achieve bronze accreditation for carbon literacy. And then just referencing the record-breaking success for the Stafford 2024 10K. Some of the park makeover elements for Raleigh Park, there were some key parts there. Investment and an overall investment in time, effort, as you can see some of the pictures there which reference the track cleaning that was complete as well across at Rowley Park. Refurbishment of public toilets and also the bowling field in at the Stafford Riley Park as well. It was £20,000 invested into the improvement of the public facilities there for the toilets, as well as what I've referenced, and I will touch on slightly on the next slide, which is the development of the Bowls Pavilion in line with the Bowls Club there. And then highlighting the Stafford Panto breaking records for the venue, which is just shy of the 19,000 individuals that it achieved at that point. Some of the key projects and investment throughout the year, working in partnership with the council, we had SPSF Phase 2 for the Stafford Leisure Centre. This was the swim pool support fund, the government scheme, which we were successful in accessing funds for. The overall project value was around £205,000, which included 21, the reference there is Kelder showers, which are flow reducing showers and energy reducing showers installed across the wet side changing rooms at the Stafford Leisure Centre, and then a 184 kilowatt solar PV system with just shy of a 70 kilowatt battery storage system installed at the Stafford Leisure Centre as well. And you can see their predicted annual generation of 126,000 kilowatt hours there as well. And then there was also the UK Shared Prosperity Fund funding that was accessed for Stone Leisure Centre, which was successful in the value of £100,000 for solar panels, which is compromises of 111 kilowatt solar PV system, predicted generation of around 85,000 kilowatt hours as well. Some of the other key parts to highlight, and I have mentioned it elsewhere, refurbishment to the Rally Park toilets, the gymnastics hub expansion at Stafford Leisure Centre, the joint project with the Bowls Club across at Rally Park, which saw the refurbishment and redevelopment of the pavilion. And there were some just key highlight bits there of some additional investments across the leisure centres. Just moving on to energy performance. As you see across there, I've highlighted the three leisure centres and the theatre. Just for reference, the only reason the heritage profile does not sit on there is the heritage profile is quite minute in terms of its utility performance. So hard to be able to provide that reference to year-on-year performance there. As you see, one of the positive factors, although not significant in this, is the solar that's been installed at the two leisure centres. However, this installation work was not carried out until late in the year, so this was around mid-Feb to March time. So we will see a more positive impact as we move into this financial year as we're in now. One of the positive ones, though, however, the air-powered eco showers installation was in July 2024 for the Wetside area of Stafford Leisure Centre. These will reduce overall water and gas consumption as well. And then one of the successes that we've had across the Stone is the CHP, which is the combined heat power unit, which has continued issues in terms of the reliability, which is impacting at times some of the performance there, which can cause for a little bit of a challenge when comparison for Stone's year-on-year utility performance. Sites have utilised different methods here to reduce both areas, so continued close management of our building management systems, revised implementations of our internal consumption control measures. We have a reactive management plan, energy management plans in place to identify any abnormal readings and actions to improve performance. And one of the key parts that I previously mentioned was enhanced carbon literacy training to support upskilling of colleagues as well. Looking ahead to 25-26, working closely in the revision of waste management and reporting based on sustainability and environmental impact, improved and reviewed focus on water consumption, and continued review and resolution in relation to the Stone CHP unit. And then just a few bits to highlight as we move forward into 25-26. Throughout the 24-25 period, discussions have undertaken between myself and the team across in the Stafford area to shape the annual business plans and development plans for the Stafford area. These plans are scheduled to launch in partnership with Stafford Borough Council for the 25-26 financial year, and these plans will incorporate clear measurable targets aligned with contractual key performance indicators. And these targets will serve as a benchmark for monitoring and evaluating performance throughout the year, ensuring accountability and continuous improvements. Some of the future projects include, but not limited to, a transition in health and safety platform. So for around 25-26 we'll be transitioning across to a new digital platform for all health and safety processes. This will include accidents, checks and compliance. This will be a phased process throughout the year. Digital improvements throughout 25-26 will be looking to improve some of the leisure management systems and the booking platforms across the leisure venues, with migrations to the cloud platform, plan to increase digital security as well. And then Rally Park developments, where we continue to work with Stafford Borough Council closely on the development of Rally Park as we move forward.
Wow. Thank you very much indeed for that. There's a lot there, a lot of information, but thank you. Yeah, is there anything else that wants to be added, or is there any more comments or anything? Or is there anything you want to ask Jill or Gillian that you want to know? There's no questions you want to ask. Right, committee, is there any question? Right, yes.
I've got a couple, actually.
Okay.
One of our members of our ward, one of the public, my husband represented her the other day, came in, and she's a disabled lady and raised a number of issues regarding disability facilities. And I think we've seen, I understand, went really, really well. But what I would like to highlight is the fact that she had actually been complaining about issues for months and months and not getting any response at all. And what basically are you going to do about sort of the response? Because she was just ignored. And I don't know whether it's because we got involved or whether she just persisted that actually she got a, and it was, it, we hoped it'll be a good outcome meeting.
Yeah, I think I know the lady reference, because I think my colleague Nick met the other day with herself. It was a really positive meeting. It was good to, it's always good to see through the customer's eyelight as well, to highlight some of those key areas and look at how we can improve moving forward. I think there's two factors to it. One of us was, part of it was for us to have a look and go, actually, what more can we do and how can we work and hear those concerns. I think there's quite a robust plan in place. However, the, probably the key bit that you mentioned is where that feedback initially went, and that's something since that point for us to review internally of why that's not been actioned in the appropriate ways. We want people to feel encouraged to step forward and raise concerns, because if we don't hear it, we don't know it, and we cannot change it. So I think it's for us to review our, but we have processes in place for that. It's clearly at this point, for whatever reason, they've slipped through the net and not been there. So for us, it's a realignment piece. We've started to do a quarterly meet the manager style session within the leisure centre, which is a customer facing aspect where the managers will be present, so they, people can drop in at those times and actually sit and have a chat and raise their concern. We will then, these were held recently, we will then update on our website with the information that's been provided and the actions and changes. So the idea is to break down that initial barrier of not being heard, but I can only agree in terms of that point, because it is a concern.
Yeah, she had tried for a long time to raise the issue and just absolutely been ignored. She's a persistent lady, so she got there in the end, but it would have been a customer you would have lost, and there's probably several others, because you know, people talk to each other, so that's the one. The other thing is, I would declare an interest here. My granddaughter goes swimming and is doing brilliantly and loves it. But I do hear, and I've experienced it myself, swimming lessons get cancelled very well. Contacted brilliantly, and we know it's cancelled, but what we don't do is get our money back. The money that we're paying out every month goes out every month, but we don't ever get any free lesson, or it bumped along, however. And nobody I spoke to last night was aware of how they got their money back, if that happened.
Yeah, there's a part there that I probably need to align to the training aspect to make sure, because we refund, it's just the process of refund is not an automatic process that we would change a direct debit or alter that. It's that refund is requested, your details for where the refund would go is provided, and then we would and we provide a refund at that side. So we do that side of things. However, the underlying part of that is what's key to me, is to stop the cancellation of lessons.
Yeah.
That's the first bit to go, actually. The view is where things happen, appreciate sickness and various elements. However, however, my part is that we want to be at a stage to ensure that that's as minimum as it can be. There's nothing worse than for a child that's excited for a lesson to find a disappointed for whatever reason. So that's the first part of it. However, we'll do some training internally in terms of making sure that refund process is known. It's just
I can say what perhaps a link on the message that we get or the email that we get that you can link into to be able to put your claim in.
Yeah, I agree. We can have a look at how we bring that forward.
I've no idea.
Even if it becomes a kind of an FAQ element for how you, or we can just update the notification that comes from our platform. That's not a problem at all. But yeah, the refunds, as I say, it's a refund form that's completed normally on the day or afterwards on the next lesson. That's handed in the refunds process. And then obviously it goes through its normal channels to do. But yeah, I can have a look at that. No problem.
Any more questions? Anybody? Yes, Philip.
In the past, we've had complaints from disabled people regarding the facilities in the match, you know, the studio. Have they now been resolved? You know, I think it was walkway, you know, the gangways or something. They were complaining about.
With not much reference, I probably won't be able to comment too much because I can't speak of them knowing off the top of my head at that point, but if there's any details you want to share off, I can check.
Yeah, okay, I'll email you.
Yeah, that'd be great, just to make sure.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Anne.
I think it's a very positive report, but I'm wondering if you ever have an independent review of your services, you know, get other people's views on what's happening, you know, even a questionnaire within the leisure centre.
Like in terms of to our members and these elements that you're referencing.
Well, yeah, members and also maybe other operators. You know, if you did sort of peer reviews, you know, might throw up things that you don't see because you're just in the operations running it.
Yeah, we have a few different measures in place as an organisation in terms of it. So we, in various different things, we have internal audits that various area managers will go and carry out of another area because obviously they're all different. So there's audits we have in place there and some centralised audits that we have that are carried out as well, health and safety, environmental sustainability audits that are carried out. We also do an NPS survey, which is a Net Promoter Score survey that's usually done on an annual basis that provides a bit of an indication on feedback from the members, what their experience, how likely they are to refer across. And then we would build an action what that comes. One of the key bits recently is introducing the Meet the Manager style session. Although we've got the online platforms to encourage and get people to engage with, it's also getting to speak to those managers face to face and bring it forward and see them as people and make sure they're customer facing as well. So there's been lots of measures throughout this year that we've implemented a little bit more, but we do a variety of different surveys and those elements.
Would that be something that you could present to us?
Yeah, we could do. Yeah, we could bring forward and share. We can factor it into, and it might be something we can factor into this report.
This.
Yeah, it's not a problem to add in.
Any more questions? No, everybody seem. Yeah, Marnie.
The Gatehouse Theatre. So it's still running at a deficit. Have you found that there are any particular shows that are bringing more money in than others? What can you do to try and increase the numbers of people that are coming through?
Yeah, so in terms of the theatre itself, the programme is quite a. There's often a shift in that theatre style market in terms of the ever changing interest that I hear. Mm-hmm. I hear drama seems to be the interest that people have, is on the topic at the moment that people seem to be quite interested in finding. And we do find there's certain shows that are booked in that perform far better. We was quite fortunate over the last period where we've had comedy nights that have took place and they've sold out. We had Jason Manford that sold out multiple times at high speed. So we do have a look at constant review and trying to encourage that. One of the focus in the mix is a little bit between having a look at the shows that are there. Obviously, a lot of this is third-party hires that come in. How do we encourage and how do we engage and work with? We continuously review that side of things and plan ahead and adjust where appropriate, but also looking at increasing the occupancy per show as well. So certain shows that might be at 50% occupancy, how can we get that to 60 and 70 and so forth? So there is an ongoing review in there. And one of the other elements in here, as I mentioned, that's not necessarily key within show performance, is looking at different ways to bring people into the theatre as well, to have a look, and get people there in the daytime hours as well, for things like the Met, in the afternoon, the film clubs in the Met as well, and have a look at that. So we, fortunate and unfortunate to an extent, obviously recently the unfortunate news of the Prince of Wales across the Gannock area, which is enabled an ability for us to have a look at what programming we've got as well there. It's a lot about balancing that schedule, because it's quite a tight program, so it's very much increasing occupancy there as well.
Can I just come in? It's interesting, Mona, that you mentioned about the Gatehouse, because I scrutinised their programme yesterday and very disappointed to see That'll Be the Day's not on there. And that is one that actually fills the theatre for the two nights that they normally come, but I've not seen it on the agenda. But anyway, that's by the by, really, because that's a personal interest. But there's so many people that...
There is a little bit with some of the shows as well to consider, that it's often we have the third parties coming in to hire the venue, so depending on how the relationship is and the enticement, if they wish to return or where it is on their overarching circle of where they're going. And we've seen that a little bit throughout the year, where shows haven't performed well, actually nationally they haven't performed well at other venues as well, so there's a bit of a trend there.
I was quite impressed actually with the Gatehouse programme, you know, what was on there, all the different things that was happening. I thought it was quite impressive, to be honest with you. But do you still put the films on for people when you put the lights down and in the afternoon on there, is it? Yeah, because I sit on a committee to do with dementia, and I know you've got a lady now at Freedom Leisure now that attends that meeting, trying to promote Stafford as a dementia-friendly area, you know, so I'm really pleased about that, so make sure she keeps on board with it. Thank you. And really, I mean, it's a silly question, but I've got to ask it. Do you think the swimming facilities and that at the Leisure Centre are... we've got enough, really, for the growing population in Stafford, because it is growing... And the other question, following on from that, we had many reports of the shower facilities not being clean and that in the past. Has that all been put to bed and sorted?
I hope we're not having those questions reflect that they kind of have been put to bed. And that's been the focus very much. I think I sat here a year ago and we spoke about the frequency of how many times the pool was closed and shut in various parts. And sitting here and not even having that conversation is a reflection that it's not at that stage at all. It's far progressed. The cleanliness in terms of it has significantly improved and moved forward. There will always be a further bar that I and Freedom we want to achieve and exceed to be that exceptional gold standard service, but it has significantly jumped and increased. In terms of the local area, I think it's difficult. It is an ever-growing population, so it is in demand. One of the greatest probably challenges for us is actually Stone as an area that sits with a single tank pool within that facility, with a growing swim scheme as well there, that obviously struggles a little bit more to facilitate that, whereas at Stafford Leisure Centre, the option of the two pools and an eight-lane pool enable us to be quite clever programming over time to look at expanding. There's always opportunities, so...
Right. Is there anything as councillors that we can help you, you know, promote your...
Definitely, I think that's where, as you mentioned, the Lady Jules, for example, who's come on board this year in the Health Communities Management. One of the key parts there is for Jules's role to come in and have a look across the community. Now, some of those hard to reach areas and some of those individuals that wouldn't traditionally go out and just engage with leisure facilities on their own or other elements there as well, and have a look at breaking down those barriers, becoming, we spoke about accessible earlier, but looking at those dementia friendly groups as well. How can we support these individuals to come into our leisure centres? So that's one of the key focuses throughout this year, to improve that. It wants to be that it's welcome for all, it's improving lives for leisure, it's welcome to everyone, but it's helping people to break down those barriers to come in. So lots to come this year, definitely, on that.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
Please, could I ask, I don't know how true this is, but I saw in the press that the fees were for the leisure centre was going to go up in January. And as a committee, we've worked really hard with food banks and healthy living, and we've thought about the cost of living crisis. And I'm just wanting some feedback, really, about the increase of fees that's coming in January.
Yeah, there's a paper put together for the report there that details a little bit around that kind of challenge, which is semi-presented within there, which is obviously, as I say, those consistently high kind of utility costs there, the cost that increased through staffing in terms of the national minimum wage, national living wage elements and pressures. However, what we do as an organisation is review our prices with a strategic view in place and have a look at those, that kind of competitor analysis as well, and having a look at actually where within the community are the similar prices, where are we in that market as well.
Do you think that raising the prices is going to stop some people from coming?
On the basis of what we've proposed, I would say not, because they're not significant in terms of those, and we've done that study into the background to make sure that they're at a level that we're not pricing ourselves out of the market, let's say, for individuals. But one of the key parts is, we again, for here, for example, we offer a really heavy concessionary scheme where there's actually 50% concessionary reduction for a certain bracket of individuals to use our leisure facilities. So it is heavily reduced for some of the areas that would need that as well. But that's part of one of the key areas, as I say, with the communities manager role as we move forward, to have a look at how do we tap into kind of how do we get those in. What are the barriers? We're not hearing that price is a barrier for individuals necessarily. Mm-hmm. So it's one for us to factor in, but I believe what we've proposed is not disproportionate to what should be being charged.
Okay, any more questions? I'll come to the table, John. Yes, Marnie, carry on.
Historically, you've had some high profile names that have been to the Gate House, and I'm talking specifically in the last couple of years. Are you finding that people are booking more on those kind of shows? For example, Nick Kershaw, John Lydon, you have Jasper Carrot, or are you finding that people are tending to come to the to watch shows where you've got bands playing that are not the original?
Yeah, there's a bit of a mix, to be fair. The high profile names I mentioned, Jason Manford earlier, they still provide a massive attraction. I can't remember the exact times, but the Jason Manford, for example, we've got the shows and it sold out within something similar to 4 days. So it's ridiculously quick in that, because they have that national following. But we are, as we spoke earlier about that show itself, we are finding with shows like that there is a good positive engagement, because people still do enjoy that as well. So I wouldn't say there's any disproportion between them. It's probably quite even in the playing field. The challenge is obviously it's people's disposable income, so, and they vary between what they choose they want to engage in. As I say, drama seems to be something that's on a theme at the moment that's increasing engagement, and that changes a little bit throughout the year as well. So we are finding that little dip in trend also.
Thank you. I mean, you probably found the Prince of Wales Theatre closing in Cannock will have an impact on the Gate House. I don't know, you know, people, because a lot of people do come from Cannock to Stafford, don't they, to watch the...
So I was going to just mention there, the only challenge albeit there has been probably not from an audience participation aspect, and growing an audience is more on the programme of offering for the calendars kind of looked at well in advance in terms of those shows booked in and build up. So unfortunately, we haven't been able to facilitate as many of the bookings as we maybe hoped.
Yeah. Yes, Jill, you wanted to.
Thank you, Chairman. Hello. We, I sit on the Stafford District Arts Council board, and obviously we discussed the Gate House to great lengths with the amount of people who are associated with the Gate House, who bring shows, who your cinema club, for instance, and the Met, etc. The biggest problem seems to be transport. They feed back that although people can get there and really enjoy themselves, there's no way of going back to around Stafford unless you drive. I think there's a 2-hour parking restriction on the car park. I'm not sure what it is at the moment.
Is that the one on the Aldi car park?
Yeah. And I wondered if you'd ever thought of bringing forward the problem with public transport.
Yeah, it's... I wouldn't say it's been probably too vocally raised to us in terms of from the Gate House as a venue. As I say, the bit we find the transport a little bit more is actually interesting with schools and school swimming and those elements there where... for that people premium element and the money they've got there, but it's not necessarily one that's probably hammered home as much for the gatehouse. It's one we can review and have a look and see if there's ways we can support or encourage transport access there as well. There's always links and there's always a conversation to be had that might enable us to give a nudge in terms of that.
Yes, yeah. It's the evening, isn't it?
Yeah.
People coming to the theatre,
yeah.
They can get there, but if they don't drive, it means taxis or, I don't know. But stuff, the borough's a large area, and if you think how poor public transport is, surely we would benefit from a good public transport system.
Yeah, definitely. The more that people can get in and out, the more opportunity they've got to access the facilities. So we can definitely take that away as something we could try and work and understand a bit further.
So maybe you could contact the county council and ask them about
the
transportation plan.
Yeah, definitely.
Sorry, Charlie.
No, it's all right, Jill. Pick it. I mean, that's a private room car park, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just wondering whether Freedom Leisure, business to business, you know, you could write to these people that own this car park, because we don't seem to be having any impact, do we, in getting them to keep it open longer. And you as a business could write to them and say what an impact it would have. They'd probably get more money and you'd get more money if we could get the people. And it is a problem. It is a big problem. And I think there's a lot of elderly people that would love to come to the theatre, but because there's no... And they can't afford the taxes all the time, so would you do that for us and write to the company that owns the car park and ask them to?
Bit of a double
We've got an empty county council car park in an evening as well.
Have you seen the Eastgate development?
Well, don't go there.
But I understand exactly where you're coming from.
If we're proud of the way we're taking forward our green programme, you know, our carbon footprint.
Mm.
We want to discourage people from driving. We want people to come on local transport.
Yeah.
We haven't got any local transport.
No.
Thank you, Chair.
You could write to Chase Ryder and ask that. Thank you, Jill, for that. Okay. Right, well, thank you very, very... Anybody else got any questions or queries? No? Everybody happy? Yeah? So, thank you very much, both of you, Alistair and Jeremy, for coming along and giving your time up. And, right, moving forward, thank you very much. Safe journey home, the pair of you. Thank you. Right, we move on to item 7C, which is the performance report. So we're on to page 4 now of our agenda. And I'm going to go through it page by page and ask for any questions. So I'm on page 4. Any queries on page 4? Any questions? No? Okay. We'll move on to page 5. Any questions? No? Wow. We're on to page 6. Any questions?
What does start a procurement of a Stafford housing strategy mean?
Is what?
On page 5, start procurement of a Stafford housing strategy, award contract for housing strategy.
Where's Sam gone? Can we hold that in advance till Sam comes back?
Okay, we'll come back to that one, shall we?
Okay. I forgot which page you're on there.
They're developing the homeless strategy. You know, they've got these 7 apartments.
Which was that on?
Well, we've got a problem at the moment, haven't we?
Wait a minute. What page are you on? Sorry.
Five.
Page 5, right. Okay, sorry. Yeah, but I'll have to wait till...
Should we come back to it?
Yeah. So we'll come back to page 5, so we'll move on to page 6.
Yeah, if I could just skip on that. It is actually our housing options officer, it's not Sam, it's Hayley Smith. But there is an allocations paper coming to...
I'm sorry, Jill.
Chairman.
Sorry.
It is, in fact, Hayley Smith's housing options officer. That's her department, not Sam. But we do have an allocations policy coming to the council on the 11th next week.
Right,
so that
okay.
Will explain the quantity.
Okay. Thank you.
Can I speak now then?
Yeah, go on.
I'm really, really worried
as a community, we've been absolutely awesome at pulling together, making sure everybody's fed, putting roofs over people, making sure that food and you name it has been shared amongst everybody, and the people that have been involved with that has been absolutely awesome. Unfortunately, there's been a bit of a sidekick from that, in that in some areas we're now considered drugs capital of the UK. There's been knife threats to some of the lovely people that's been helping us. There's been drugs and drug dealing and stealing going on, again, people who've been helping people. There's some significant mental health issues and antisocial behaviour problems. And there's also rats problems that we haven't had before. And that combination of things has been absolutely overwhelming. And we are trying our best to tackle it. And it feels like whenever people are getting arrested and put away, there's a wave of people coming from Stoke to fill the gap. And it's really alarming to see what's happening.
I don't. Do you want to come in there? Because I don't think that's your.
I just don't think that that has anything to do with what we're talking about here. I appreciate and respect what you're bringing forward, but I don't think that's something for this meeting. I know that Giles Parsons is fully aware of what I think you're talking about, and there is a lot of action actually being taken.
But it's just overwhelming.
But I don't think that's for this meeting. Okay, so where is it? Well, I think it's something that Giles Parsons is dealing with and bringing to.
You're aware of it, yes. Yeah. Okay, right. Can we leave it then, and we'll move on now to page 6. Thank you, Jill. Thank you. Page 6, any queries? Page 7.
Yes, on page 7, there's been an incident that Marnie's aware of where somebody's come in claiming to say that there's been diseased trees and they've had permission to chop down trees when the trees have belonged to County Council and they haven't had permission. And the trees weren't diseased. And I'm just flagging that up as it's something that's been an issue.
I think if Josh, do you want to come to the table and talk and make any comments about the tree situation? Because we had this conversation, didn't we, in our previous meeting?
We've got no control over County Council trees unless they are TPO.
Yeah.
So we can only control, we have, between both authorities, we have 78,000 trees that we manage of our own, that we have. Of our land, but the only way we have any rights over any of the trees is if they've got a tree preservation order on.
Yeah.
So we can't control anything that's done to county trees. That would be for the landowner to deal with.
Are you saying that the TPOs, the county council trees, is that what you're saying?
County council trees, and that stops them from being removed.
Can we have the conversation then outside this meeting and then we'll find out and we'll take it through to the County Council? Okay, is that all right? Right, okay, it's just that, you know, has anybody else got a question on page 7? No? Page 8?
Yeah.
Yes, Steve.
Thank you, yeah. Under the tree management at the bottom. It says progress update completed, funding for new integrated tree management system secured. When will it become live?
So we are procuring at the moment.
Right.
So we're in procurement with County Council and we're hoping to get them live. We'll certainly have sighted it in the new year, so in quarter 4. It's again quite a job to get the 78,000 trees onto this, but certainly early next year we'll have a tree system in the live portal that you'll be able to yourselves, our residents and our officers will be able to log on to and start populating that with our tree data, our TPO data. There's a lot of work to do on trees to begin with both chemicals and particularly around the TPOs at the borough.
Are you going to ask about that?
We have got issues, I'll be honest, we have got issues with TPO officers, like a lot of, sorry, the tree officers generally,
like a lot of professional officers, we are struggling to recruit them. We, at the moment, we've lost our rising star, which was Gareth Hare. He has now gone to Moorlands because he's moved that way on, so he's got to work nearer to where he lives. And he's done an awful lot of work on the new system going forward. Whereas it stands at the moment, both authorities, both here and at Calic Chase, we've got two part-time consultants doing our tree works, which isn't enough. And we're looking to address that again in the new year with a new tree team, with a principal tree officer over both.
So that would suggest that all TPOs aren't in place then, if you haven't got TPOs?
No, I'll be honest with you, all TPOs were due for revision around about 20 years ago. The government said that all had to be revised. The borough has a lot of area TPOs, which we need to review and revise and relook at. But again, we're in no different situation here than we are at a lot of other authorities, both across Staffordshire and nationally, to be honest with you. We've given the amount of trees that we've already talked about this previously, we've got the same sort of sizes. I think Coventry metropolitan area, we've got a lot of trees that we need to manage going forward. But yeah, we're going to be working through that over the next year or so.
Yeah, I mean, I think trees. I think we've all got problems with trees, especially the under trees. But yeah, so thank you for that, Josh. Yes, so picking up your point, Louise, speak to your county councillor, the area, about.
I have tried.
Well, we'll
they
have
said
a conversation.
They
okay.
And it,
yeah.
It hasn't materialised.
Right. Any more questions on page 8, everybody? Right, on page 9, any questions on page 9? Yeah. Yes, Anne?
I just wondered, I mean, it's probably me, I mean, I have read emails about this, but it says that there are four play areas that were prioritised. I'm just wondering where they are. One was Barnes Road, wasn't it?
I can find them out. We've got the five, including Rowley, so there
okay.
are the five. I'll send them
okay.
out to you again. I can't remember, I'll need the email again or two. But I'm not that clever, to be honest with you, but there are, they are.
And then, all in total, there's 11, isn't there, that you're going to do?
There were 11 on the... So we looked at all the play areas, we prioritised 11. And then out of the 11, we said, right, what are we going to do first? So we then reprioritised into the top five, which has literally come through, went through to Cabinet, I think, early on this year. That report did prioritise the five, which one of which was Rowley.
Yeah.
Rowley we were already looking through as a destination park anyway. But the other four are smaller. I think Barnes
Road and then Barnes, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
where they were. There's a couple of bees in there. And
Boom Grove,
that's one, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm just wondering about the other...
How
many six, is it?
Number six. Well, what we needed to do is we needed to develop a play area programme, because we can't do everything.
Yeah.
We've got well over 70 play areas in the borough that we manage without the external ones. And you've got to try and prioritise them somehow. Now, what we did a few years ago at Canic is we came up with a four-year improvement programme. And we managed to do the first 4 years in 3 years, so we then did another improvement programme. We had a list, and we did exactly the same here at the borough. We came up with a list and prioritised them on need, on the play area need, and said, right, these are the ones we want to look first. So we were on that list, and as soon as we get towards the bottom, we'll then start working on the rest. But the 11 will be the ones we'll be doing over the next, probably next 3 years or so, as part of that.
So obviously there's strange time constraints because of devolution.
Mm-hmm.
How will you develop a future strategy and how will that be done?
Well, given devolution, what we will do is we'll hand over our information that we've got to the new organisation. There's also the potential that, you know, some of the parishes might want to take out some of the play areas and things like that. So you can either see it as a well, look, it's an opportunity, to be honest with you. We've got the information there now. We know what our priorities are. We will hand that into the new organisation.
And as I say, I think there's a lot of little play areas, like we said the other night,
yeah,
you know, that need attention, and these are the problems, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay. So the work being done on that, so good. So that's page 9, yeah? Now we're on to page 10. Any queries on page 10? No? Page 11? Yes, Louise.
Right, I'm aware that for disabled people their council tax has increased and there's been a celebration of an increase of disability spending on disability facilities grants. However, these people have also had a benefits reduction in DLA or whatever the equivalent is. And I know of incidences where people are living in a property where they've got all the disability aids that they require, where the Disability Act is relevant, and the family isn't in a secure situation as far as housing concerned, and I'm banging my head up against a brick wall with this one.
Sam,
I feel desperately sad for the family.
Do you want to come to the table and see if you can throw any light on that, Sam, please?
I have been to Carlack Lamb, who agrees with me that the Carers Act and the Disability Act are relevant to that particular case.
I just clarified the question. Is it an increase in council tax?
I'm expressing a situation where these group of people are having a reduction in benefits, increase in council tax. There's a celebration that, oh yes, we're putting in more disability equipment for people. However, I am looking at a case as an example where the house that they're currently in has all the adaptations that they need, but they're not being allowed to stay there, and I spoke to Colette Lamb about it, and she agrees that the Disability Act and Carers Act is relevant within that case, and I cannot get, people are just passing the book and not wanting to commit or make a decision on it, which it's excruciating for the family, especially at this time.
Is it a specific case that we can look at?
Yes. But we're not allowed to bring specific.
No, but is it details that you could share on email outside of the meeting, please?
Yes. I was just thinking that, you know, can you have arrange a meeting with Sam and discuss this outside the meeting?
I will pass it on to the revenues and benefits team because I'm not an expert in council tax or benefits. But what I can say is we do celebrate the facilities that we provide to people because they do need them. And in every case, the person applying for the grant to adapt the home has to certify an intention to remain in the property for 5 years before the grant is given. So if they are renting from a landlord, the landlord signs that certificate. If they own the property privately, they sign that certificate. So we always require that someone is allowed to stay. And if the landlord has any intention that that person can't stay, then it's unlikely that we would fund the facilities in the first place. We would help them to find somewhere that is more suitable that could be adapted.
The property is completely suitable. I just need to help them be able to stay there.
We'll have this conversation, you know, and arrange a meeting with Sam and discuss it, you know, outside the meeting. Has there anybody else got any queries or anything? Just to I think I mentioned it to you, Sam, before about the children leaving care and moving into housing. And do they understand that 17 and a half, they can put their names down before they're 18 so they can build on to being on the list, if you like, so they can move forward with it?
Yeah, so I referred to Hayley Smith, who is our expert in this. She's Service Manager for Housing Options and Homelessness. She has confirmed they can join the list at 17 and a half years old, and if people approach the council for support with that, we will support them to make that application. If properties come available and they're able to be offered those just before they turn 18, then we work with the county council to act as guarantor for them so they can accept the property, they don't miss out because they've not come of age yet. There's a steering group and a panel that meets to make sure that the people that are in that niche gap of 17 and a half to 18 who are in need of housing from leaving care, there is a process in place to support them with that and make sure they don't fall through any gaps.
Thank you for that. The other thing, it's probably a question I need to put to Anna, really, how we can promote people that's got a spare room in their house, you know, so we're really short of foster parents for children, especially, you know, as they're getting older and what have you. And if anybody's got any spare rooms, and this is something for all the borough councillors, actually, to put it out in their community. If anybody's got a spare room that they're well into... take a child on board, you know, so they can live in a family situation, then please promote it, whichever way, you know, any meetings or anything you go to, because we're desperate to
friends do it.
To promote that, yeah. So, yeah. Yes, Marnie?
Question for Sam. I'm aware of a situation where a young man has, due to personal circumstances, has gone into rehab. They've been there since June and won't be leaving until well after Christmas. But when they come out, they'll find themselves in a situation where they're homeless. In a situation like this, as they're obviously currently out of the area because of where they are, what happens from getting them on the homeless register? They were previously housed here in Stafford. This is where the family are. However, because they were a single male, they were put in housing that was full of single males with addictions. In order to safeguard this vulnerable adult, how would we go about trying to secure housing for them when they come out of their rehab situation?
So you've described someone who does have a local connection to the area, so it'd be right for them to approach the Borough Council for help with their housing options, knowing that that moment is going to come where they're going to come out of that rehab facility and then potentially be homeless. We do an awful lot of work on preventing homelessness, so we would absolutely engage at an early point and not wait for it to happen before we get involved. So either the individual or the rehab centre, if they've got people that are supporting them there, an agency or a partner, could approach, and then the team would open a prevention case to look at ways to make sure that there's a transition there for that individual. It doesn't mean to say that we will definitely offer them a key to a property, but they would be looked at as someone who has a local connection to the area and a duty to support and assist them to prevent their homelessness when they come out of rehab.
Thank you. I think I'm aware of the lack of housing provision that we've got, particularly for single people, and it just seems a shame after all that work and effort for them to end up being put in a situation where they are around people who are vulnerable themselves after all the hard work. So I will contact the family and perhaps we'll come and pay you a visit, get some advice if that's okay.
Okay, so any more questions on page 11? No, so we'll move on to page 12. Any questions on page 12? Page 13? Page 14? Yes, Marnie?
I'm still seeing issues with on-street bin refuse, overflowing bins, particularly outside some of the schools. I wondered whether officers had considered my idea of having QR codes so that residents can report overflowing bins and allow them to then be collected sooner than the arranged collection dates. I just feel that it might be a way that residents can help us to get the jobs done more efficiently, as opposed to having millions of poo bags and precariously on top of each other.
Lee, are you coming to the table?
I'm just all rubbish again.
I knew you'd be here for a reason.
We've been dying
together. This is what we've looked at in the past, there's advantages and disadvantages with those sort of methods. I think one of the issues is the cost implication to it, and secondly, what we found from talking to other authorities is it does get abused a little bit, so people will scan codes when actually the bins don't need emptying. And then also another issue with it is residents can sometimes get a little bit frustrated because they will report an issue with an overflowing bin via the QR code, and we have only got a finite resource that we can draw upon, and if we can't get someone out there quickly, then people just end up getting frustrated with the system, and it doesn't quite work. So We have looked at it in the past. There's a bit of a mixed response from local authorities who we've spoke to about it before. What I would actually say is our reporting by the website actually works quite well anyway, so if you can report into us, we do tend to get them when we can. If there's a particular ongoing issue where there's a repetitive problem, please just let you know and we can re-look at the routes and the schedules, and we can maybe look at picking up more frequently. I can't give any promises because, as I say, we've only got a finite resource, but for our hotspot areas, then please do let us know, as much as we ask our operatives to tell us, because they don't quite get that message over to us. But please just let us know if there are areas where there's particular hotspots, and we'll try to see if we can review your schedule.
Okay.
Can I come back on that, please, Chair? Sir Graham Balfour.
Yeah.
Obviously, people are using the green as well to walk dogs.
Yeah.
Kids are using the bin. It's mostly used for dog poo bags. There's no room for litter, so it's just a mess there. It's only a very small bin as well. Maybe get some stickers so that residents know that they can report it online or on the app, because not everybody is aware that's doable.
Yeah, it's supplemental for a while, actually, and also the enforcement fines is maybe something we can look at again, because, you know, I think that's probably due to refresh as well. So we'll talk to colleagues in Environmental Health about that. So, yeah, I do take on board your point. It's something I'll take back and consider. I think, unfortunately, we tend to get people to just make a Jenga pile of the poo bags and everything else on the bins. I mean,
take it home and put it in their own bin.
A lot of people do just take it to the next bin or take it home, but fortunately there are some people that like to make that Jenga tower and make it look like a little bit more difficult for options. But we've got over 1,500 bins across the borough, you know. To me, in the vast majority of places, there's enough bins, and unfortunately sometimes there's one that might get extra use, and instead of walking 1 minute around the corner to the next one, the pilot looks up at that point.
Through you, Chair, I think the issue in that area is they're all very small bins on lampposts or the half bins, and they're just not big enough to be able to cater for the just general people on the street, as well as the masses of children that are coming out of school.
Yeah,
we'll certainly
look at that area. The issue is, if you
so
start putting bigger bins, is then actually handling and picking those up. That can become
maybe
easier.
Put some, a few more small
that's
bins
not
in
not
the area.
They don't want to do that, you know.
Yeah, well, certainly what we'll do is we'll speak to the operative that covers that area. We'll go out ourselves, have a look, and options are potentially an extra bin or two, or extra frequency to collect them if it isn't.
Okay.
I just wanted to mention that in Manor Ward in Henkside, I don't know if he works everywhere else, there's a man that goes with a caged sort of orienting bins, and he works so hard. And one day I'd seen him kicked over somewhere, and I said to him, you know, sorry, but somebody's kicked a bin over, there's rubbish all over this pavement, blah blah. And I went past there later, and he'd done that as well. You probably know who he is, I don't know his name, but I'd like to say thank you to him. You know, he's a really hard worker.
I'll just make a note of what's been raised, probably John, but I'll check and pass that on.
Yeah, he's very good.
We had a problem at Yelverton, because I used to live at Passage in Yelverton, because the people walk the dogs around Yelverton, the two exits. They used to get called, but I reported it a couple of times, and it seemed to have sorted it itself. I don't know whether it's a problem again.
Yeah,
it
seems to get done, doesn't it?
So I used to just let them know which ones and they'd get done.
But I think if people don't know
that they can do it,
it's surprising how many people are still unaware of the fact that they can. So any kind of posters or stickers that can be put that can direct people to the right place.
Right, okay, and I've got to say a big thank you for that, Lee. Thank you, Josh, and thank you, Sam. I've got to say a big thank you to Holly that sat at the back and not being called to the table, and he sat there very patiently, but he had no questions to answer. So thank you for coming along. Right, we're on to the last item now, which is the work programme. And is there any added issues or anything that anybody wants to raise on the work programme?
Wales Passing's going to come again and report to us?
It's an annual.
Yeah,
it's an annual, it's not on here, is it? So.
I take my hat off to Street Scene. I think they're doing an amazing job. The fly tipping and aggravation we've had, and they've just been absolutely awesome in trying to help. And I just want to say a massive thank you to them.
Yeah.
Because, we're tearing our hair out. And they've just been brilliant, so thank you.
We've got order items there for the future items, and our next meeting isn't until the 18th of March, so we've got another few months before and then we've got, what is it, Josh, you've changed, we've got something coming, what is it, the waste
collection. We moved it to this meeting.
Is there anything else you want adding on the work programme? Do you think we've got? Yes.
I imagine that by the time it comes to this, the food waste collections are going to be
next door.
Almost,
yeah.
Almost,
so only 2 weeks away.
We'll do an update. Chair.
Pardon?
We will do an update on food waste, Chair, for yourself.
On the 18th of March? Yeah, so you'll be all ready to go then, won't you, surely? Yeah? Yeah? So, have you got another meeting arranged, Martin?
We're arranging one for January.
It's mid-January, but we haven't got a date yet.
Yeah.
Oh, right, okay. Okay. Philip?
Ran a report recently about the increased number of pauper burials.
Of what, sorry?
What they call pauper burials, where people haven't got relatives and they're cancelled and having to arrange funerals and that.
I don't know. Can you throw any light on that, Josh?
That would be under me. I'm not aware of an increase locally within the borough, or certainly it can but we. I can speak to Danny and see if there is specifically want to know about it.
It's just something as I read.
Yeah,
there were an increase, particularly with people sleeping on the streets and things like that. And
I'm certainly not aware of one point in the borough. What I do know, what has risen to the fore now, are these fast funerals, the cheap ones. Lots of people going. It's a faster life. Lots of people going for a much cheaper type of a burial.
Well, I mean, I know of a couple of funerals that I've, well, not funerals actually, I've just said, when's the funeral? There's no funeral, they've just gone, that's it.
Yeah.
I went, what? Okay,
Yeah.
Right, I think we've fulfilled our agenda tonight, and thank you very much for attending, and safe journey home, everybody, and thank you, and I look forward to the 18th of March.